Hello, everyone. You're listening to CITR at 101.9 FM, broadcasting from unceded Musqueam territory. Thank you for tuning into today's episode of Intersection, CITR's biweekly radio podcast about feminism, gender empowerment, and bringing down the patriarchy. All of which are in a day's work for the small but powerful team here at CITR. We air every other Tuesday from 4 to 5 p.m., so make sure you tune in then for some woke conversations and content. Today's show is going to be really exciting. It's Drag 101, and we have our very own Liam Hart to tell us all about drag. Liam, thank you so much for being here with us today.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
Hi, I'm Danielle.
Hey, Danielle.
Yeah. So Liam, for people like me out there who might not be that familiar with the drag scene in general and just the drag scene in Vancouver, what can you tell us about it?
So Vancouver's really fortunate to have like a really diverse drag scene. A lot of like smaller towns won't really have as much as we do, but we'll have like locations for really different types of drag in Vancouver. So there's going to be those like really weekly, almost daily shows that are happening in the West End, but also stuff like commercial drag or the drag in East Van. Each form of drag really you will find like has their own subset and their own class and their own community that really develops around it.
Mm-hmm. And what is the community like? And what was your entry point into it?
So the community is great. It's really supportive. You'll see queens like always going to each other's shows, tipping each other, being spotlights in everyone's show, just giving everyone their chance to develop and giving each other opportunities to do their own drag and everything like that. There's also a huge part of the scene, which is there's so much charity work that goes on with the drag community in Vancouver. So there's a lot of the shows, there's like the reigning empress, or whomever is currently, they just had the elections. I believe it's Alma. I'm not going to say the last name because I'm told I'm not supposed to swear on the show right now. But
thank you,
Alma
Liam.
Is the first name of the current reigning empress. Mm-hmm. And yeah, they often will do like shows with numbers dedicated towards charity work. So the tips jar will go around and all the money raised during that's going to go towards that charity.
Right.
And then my introduction to the drag scene in Vancouver. So I started performing as soon as I turned 19 because I'd already really been practicing drag stuff. Mm-hmm. The current reigning empress was hosting a show at XY, which was a club downtown. It recently shut down because there's a problem going with financial issues in the for like queer venues. There's a lot of other issues that are going on with that for like a lot of different queens who are trying to have their own spaces and having them shut down because it's just not becoming feasible for them to do that. But XY was this club in the West End on Davie Street, and every Sunday night, Alma would host a few shows, and the last one would be this kind of open mic night for drag queens. So they'd have like 11, 12 performances happening that night. And it was just drop in, you would message them, bring in your music, and that was where I had my first performance. But since then, I really was just like, I've been performing at UBC a lot and just shows around Vancouver.
And when did you like first become familiar with drag?
I used to go to these LGBTQ-focused conferences in Toronto and Ottawa when I was in high school. And there I saw there was one person who was a bit older and had been kind of doing a bit of drag. So that's where I really first got introduced to what drag was.
Right, right.
And I also had another experience with when I was working back in high school when I was grade 9 or 10 or something. I had a manager who told me that he was a drag queen. And I kind of found out about it that way. But I didn't really get into it myself so much until it was the summer between grade 11 and grade 12 when I kind of started practicing makeup to kind of pursue drag for myself.
Very cool.
Did you have any like specific inspirations, would you say, like on social media or like YouTubers or anyone that you were like, that's who I want to kind of try to emulate? Or was it just like you had a very like your own specific idea of like how you wanted your queen persona to be?
My queen persona is just whatever like I wanted to feel like when I was on stage. So it was just however I wanted to act. It was just a way for me to be myself without having to have so many restrictions up. And just like I could be on stage, I could be uncensored, I can wear whatever I want and act however I wanted, which was never like a problem. I feel like when I'm saying I can act however I want, people just think of The Purge.
No rules in drag.
Just like a friendly form of anarchy.
Yeah, I love it.
But no, I didn't really do personas because for the longest time I didn't watch RuPaul's Drag Race because I wasn't just that into it. I was more interested in like the support of local queens, and I had connections through. I had a queer, not professor, but teacher in high school who was able to pair me with some resources they had in the queer community for Vancouver, who were able to like kind of help me develop my drag stuff because I wasn't that interested in like watching the content online.
Okay. Can you tell us about your drag name?
Oh, so my drag name's Midoriya, and kind of the mindset I had going into it, which took a very long time for the like the first year of me like practicing makeup and thinking about doing drag. I didn't have the drag name. But when my mom was thinking about having me and when she was pregnant with me, she thought that she was having a girl for like the longest time, and it wasn't until like I was born that she realized that I wasn't a girl. So she had that name picked out, and it was Midoriya, and it was named after her grandmother.
Wow,
very cool.
So that's just kind of how I chose it, because I wanted it to be something that was authentic to me.
Yeah, amazing. It's got a nice ring to it. Speaking of RuPaul's Drag Race, what do you think about it as a show? Like, you said you didn't watch it before. Do you ever watch it now? What are your thoughts on that?
I watch it now. I'm like up to date on every episode. There are problems and there are benefits of the show. The best parts of the show are the queens. The main problems are RuPaul. Because the queens, it's an amazing platform for them to show what they can do and just show the world what drag can be and just really bring drag to the mainstream. But it also shows like a very hateful form of what drag is, which as fun as it is, it gives the scene a bad name because often that's all people will think about when they think of drag, just whatever RuPaul has. And there's also the issues of it's very like drag queen centered, which Vancouver like has a huge scene for like drag things, which is the term people who are non-binary and still want to engage with drag would do. Or Vancouver also has a huge scene for hyper queens, which are people who pretty much just aren't cis men who perform drag as a drag queen. So if you're a trans woman, you can be, what was that term?
Drag thing?
Not drag thing, sorry, I'm just blanking on that term. Hyper queen.
Hyper queen.
So Vancouver, there was a recent competition that was happening in Vancouver for like a bunch of drag hyper queens. And then also drag kings. But from what I'm hearing, there aren't too many drag kings that are performing that much in Vancouver when the emergence of drag things came. A lot of them found that as more like what they wanted to be labeled as.
I know RuPaul, he made some pretty transphobic comments about trans people participating in drag, and I'm just reading it off from online. He said drag loses its sense of danger and its sense of irony once it's not men doing it.
Wow.
I mean, that's just ridiculous.
Like,
its sense of danger because it's not inclusive. Again, RuPaul, yes, he is often what people want to, who people want to hear from when they're thinking about drag, but he's outdated with a lot of it. There's so many better drag resources, and if people just look at the queens themselves, often they'll have much better outlooks on the whole community. But yeah, drag, the local Vancouver scene is so much more accommodating. It's not losing anything by letting other people who aren't cis men perform.
But being like, more inclusive.
It's being more inclusive, and you're seeing what more people have to offer. One of my favorite queens is a hyper queen, and just amazing on stage, amazing like physical storyteller.
It is a performance. It is an act of self-expression, so anyone can do it.
Also, like on the note of RuPaul's Drag Race, I read an article recently on beatroot.com, and it was called The Voices of Pride, an open conversation with Vancouver's drag community. So basically what one of the queens that they interviewed, their name was Isolde N. Baron, or maybe it's eyes old and barren, I don't know. But yeah, so basically they said about RuPaul's Drag Race, they said, I think on the one hand it's great because it educates people, but on the other hand it's limiting because there are so many types of drag out there, but we're only seeing a few represented. So the baby queens are growing up seeing the Drag Race girls and copying them without discovering their own artistry. So do you agree with that, that like because we have this very specific, like prepackaged media representation of drag in RuPaul's Drag Race, that now people, the new generations of drag queens, are going to be less sort of like cutting edge, and they're just going to follow more of like what's it called, a norm, I guess. Like now that drag's become more mainstream, do you think that people are becoming more the same, like it's becoming homogenized?
I feel like as people start engaging with the community, there's always going to be those who are more like veteran on the drag scene. And if watching RuPaul's Drag Race is what gets you into drag, seeing the local queens and engaging with that community is what's going to get you to engage with your own drag.
Right, okay.
Because there are also different shows online about drag stuff. There's a show called Dragula, which it does, like, it highlights horror drag. It really shows, like, a different style of performance up there. But with the problems of RuPaul's Drag Race, I don't think it's going to limit people's drag potential just from what I'm seeing in the community. Because Drag Race is, it's on its 11th season now. If it were to be limiting, we would see like a huge decline in what people have to offer, and that's just not happening.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree.
So I'm curious as to how much work does it go into performing. So what can you tell us about the time and resources that you have to put into a performance?
Yeah, like what are the various elements that go into a performance?
So outfits are like its own thing. If you're getting into drag, you need to buy an entirely new wardrobe. The shoes, which are really difficult to find. As like someone who's a size 12 women's, it's almost impossible because most places will stop at about 11. There's a store in Vancouver that'll sell like stuff that looks like it's for like drag queens or like sex workers that goes up to like size 15 women's, and it's really useful. Otherwise, like Payless has stuff, but it's so difficult to find, and it's whatever you find is going to be a very limited selection, so you can't always get really fun stuff. Other things is like the physical demand that some of the outfits will take for you to do. Like corsets, they're really fun. But after like
Corsets?
I think they're really fun, but oh my god, they hurt so much. Because I just have my roommate do it until like it'll stop, and I can lose so much around the edges.
I like how you said that in the same line. It's so painful, but it's so much fun.
Oh, I
have to say, for our listeners, though, I was talking to Liam earlier before the show, and he mentioned how during one of his shows, he sort of fell on his knees and skinned his knees, and he was bleeding, but he still thought it was an amazing, amazing experience and performance. So, you know, a little bit of a maybe masochistic tendency there.
It wasn't like that I fell on my knees. That was 100% intentional.
Okay.
It just, like, I knew it was going to hurt. I was doing a performance at UBC Pride over the summer, and just, I was like, all right, this is the part of the song where I'm just going to, like, jump up and, like, slam my knees for, dramatic effect. And then I checked after, and, like, my two pairs of tights that I was wearing, I had bled through both of them.
Oh, my God. That's when you know you did it right.
No pain, just, no gain.
Really giving my all.
What has your experience of, like, the UBC-specific, like, drag scene been? Is it a good, like, is it a prevalent thing here? Because I honestly haven't been exposed to it much. So, like, how is that?
So, the Pit has their, like, Drag 101 nights I've seen every so often. I wanted to go when I was a little bit younger, but they weren't, like, when I was a first year here. But they weren't able to make an exception because I was underage at the time. Since then, the only really big thing that I've seen with UBC and drag has been the UBC Pride, where they had, like, many queens come out. Since then, I have been having opportunities to perform around campus. So, like, that Pride mural that we have, I had the opportunity to MC and perform at that. But there weren't really other queens there. So UBC's been, it's been great for me to have this opportunity to really perform and be paid for my drag. But aside from that, I haven't seen too many opportunities to make it really a viable source for, like, a lot of queens to do.
Yeah.
I'm curious, and you probably answered this to some degree earlier, but what does drag actually mean to you? Like, what does it give you? I understand it's a performance, it's a means of self-expression, I totally get that, but like, what does it really mean to you?
It's just a chance for me to really hone in on myself, because drag is such an all-encompassing thing that you have so many opportunities to really focus on tiny things. Like, there's performance, there's makeup, there's... I had the opportunity to work with my friend who's a hairdresser to, like, style one of my wigs, which took a couple days to really make it have the volume that I wanted. There's, like, practicing... Like, I'm taking dance classes at Harbor right now to really work on the performance aspect of my drag. When I first got into drag, I really didn't understand how diverse it was going to be, like, how many different little categories I was going to have to work on.
So do you remember how you felt after your first drag show? Like, after the show, do you remember that feeling?
I remember I was, like, I was still, like, having the feelings of being super nervous. My best friend came with me to my show, and I was just, like, super nervous before it, and then it's done, and I'm like, okay, I'm still, like, breathing really heavily. I have no idea. Like, okay, we did my first show. This is great. Oh, I just need to take a lot of deep breaths right now.
Cool. Okay, so this is a sort of an unrelated to the actual performance aspect of drag, but we were just kind of talking before, and since we are the Gender Empowerment Collective, we like to talk about gender. So gender identity in fields like fields like drag, I guess, and like any sort of like cross-dressing, that kind of thing, is often like conflated or intermingled with sexual orientation in the mind of the public, you know? So do you know, like, are there a lot of straight people, if any, that you know that do drag? Like, how does that work in the community? Is it a thing at all?
I haven't met any drag queens who are straight. However, I do know that that is a thing. It's not just for queer people, but just for, like, what drag has been for a lot of people. It's... like, historically, what drag has been somewhat of an outlet for, like, trans people to express themselves when they couldn't be out publicly.
Yeah.
So, like, some, like, queer historical figures, like Marsha P. Johnson from the Stonewall Riots. She was a drag queen, a sex worker, an activist, and also, like, a trans woman.
Yeah.
So drag has often been, like, the way people could express themselves and express their gender identity when they haven't had that opportunity to be out publicly. Especially with, like, some of the laws that had been prevalent in the United States previously in regards to, like, cross-dressing and gender identity.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
I do have a question about inclusivity and, and race in drag, but I'm going to ask you that after we take a little short break. Okay. So, everyone, please stay tuned. You're listening to Intersections at CITR at 101.9 FM. We'll be right back after this short break.
The UBC Women in Science Club provides support for female undergraduates in science fields. Our club has three pillars: mentorship, building community, and connecting people. We offer networking events with alumni, professional development workshops, as well as an ongoing mentorship program to support students through challenges that arise for women pursuing careers in science.
Stressed lately? UBC Yoga Club is here to offer you a peace of mind. Come out to any of our 17 weekly classes running 7 days a week, ranging from 8 a.m. to 7 p.m. We have a class to accommodate your needs and abilities. Check us out at ubcyogaclub.com.
Hello, everyone. You're listening to CITR at 101.9 FM. For those who just tuned in, we are currently talking to Liam Hart, who is a drag queen performer, and we're talking about drag in general, Drag 101. That's what today's show is about. So, Liam, my question before we went off for that super-duper short break was, speaking of inclusive... I can't pronounce this word. Can you please pronounce that word for me?
Inclusivity.
Thank you. Speaking of that and race in drag... do you think that drag queen performers who are people of color, do you think they kind of experience the drag scene a little differently?
I don't think in, like, current days that it's that different, but it was the drag scene was really, like, originated with, like, Black people of color, and, like, queer Black people of color, because There's this great documentary called Paris is Burning that describes the ballroom scene in New York. And it really describes like how drag was born. And although drag was like one of the categories, because often you'll hear like terms like realness or whatever, which just means that you in that moment are like emanating whoever you're pretending to be. Like that's just who you are. That came from that. And it wasn't just drag, because drag was going to be a category under that. But there's also like uniform military realness, and people would just like walk the ball and win prizes and that kind of stuff through being whoever it was. So that was really like run by queer people of color.
Yeah, I guess where that question came from is I haven't watched a lot of RuPaul's, and I know that it's not an accurate representation of the drag scene at all, or not an accurate representation, maybe not at all. But there, I know that the last, I think, what, 11 queens, they were all white. And there was like a lot of like backlash about that fact. And some people said, oh, well, it's okay because RuPaul's a person of color.
The last winners, you mean? Or
the last.
The queens that are.
I think it would be winners.
The winners, yeah.
Because there's are many, many people of color on the show.
Oh, no, no. I mean, no, of course, on the show. I mean, like the winners were. We're all white, yeah. So there was kind of, there was like a lot of conversation about if the drag scene is truly inclusive when it comes to race specifically. And also it was kind of weird that they somehow used RuPaul as the fact that he's the creator of the show. So therefore, obviously the show's not racist because he's a person of color. I don't think that necessarily kind of, that's not a logical argument to me, but I was just curious about kind of like race in the drag scene. Like, is it harder for performers who are colored, like now in this day and age, to kind of get the same recognition, or
to somewhat justify that argument that's being made? Yes, he's the host, but he's also the one who decides the winner on the show.
That's fair.
Yeah.
So it's really whatever he thinks. Not saying that that argument is not true, but it is chosen by RuPaul, so that does make sense why they would be bringing him more into that argument. I know Vancouver has like some people of color who are performing drag. It's definitely dominated by like white people for the most part.
Okay, sort of struggle to say white people. You're like, well, can I say this word on here? White people.
Yeah, but I don't really think that the drag scene, again, I can only really speak about Vancouver's drag scene for this kind of stuff. I don't really think that it's what's limiting it, because there are so many opportunities for people to perform. There's like charity shows, which you don't have to be booked for. You can just message the person and they'll give you a slot. It's really whoever wants to perform really can in Vancouver. And you can find your own spaces to do it. There may be other social issues behind that, but at least in Vancouver, I don't really know what the reasons more people of color aren't performing, if that's even a thing.
Right. That's fair. That's fair.
Okay, we also were wondering about, I'm just jumping in with these very random questions. We were wondering about like genres of drag. You mentioned earlier horror drag. I don't know what the full name was, but yeah. So what kind of genres are out there for our listeners to get educated?
So there's this show put on by these four drag things, which again are like non-binary people who are performing drag. And they form this drag kind of performance group called The Darlings. And I can't stress this enough. The Darlings are the best thing in drag I've ever seen. They're local performers, Rose Butch, Continental Breakfast, PM, and Made in China.
Okay.
And they do this kind of mix between contemporary theater and modern drag, which is how they describe it. And it's the weirdest thing I've ever seen, but it's just so amazing. They did this one performance that was like a minute long of them just playing checkers to like dramatic music, and I'm not doing this justice. They did like a 5-minute performance of just cutting onions and like crying because of it. Yeah, it's that's wild. So good.
Are these live performances or can we find them?
It's the live performances. Okay. There's some on their like Instagram stories or all that, but I haven't seen it like published after being filmed.
And what genre is that called again? What would that be like?
So what they're labeling it is a mix between contemporary theater and modern drag.
Right. Okay. But very cool.
Whereas there are like terms for drag looks, there isn't too much in the way of drag like performances having their own labels. So, like, you'll see things called, like, fishy or, like, campy in drag, which are thrown around very loosely on RuPaul's Drag Race, but shouldn't be too much within the community because they do hold, like, some more negative connotations where everyone, like, on that show is being really heavily, like, oh, I want to, like, make my time. I want to be kind of, like, hateful. And it's fun TV, but that's not really the kind of environment that people are wanting to have in their local scene where they're really wanting to be more supportive and, like, growing together as a community. So if you're, like, referring to people's drag as, like, campy in a bad way, then it's just being rude and negative.
Yeah.
Right.
That's good to hear, because I think that the kind of perception based on RuPaul's Drag Race is that queens can be very, like, catty towards each other and that kind of thing. So it's awesome that the actual scene is super inclusive and welcoming, especially to newcomers. Do you find that it is that way? Like, for people entering the drag scene, is there a very welcoming, like, vibe? Are people willing to kind of, like, mentor the younger people that come into it?
To a degree. So there's this system in the drag community called, like, drag mother and drag daughter type deal. Oh, so, like, a drag mother is someone who has been around and performed for a while. And, like, a drag daughter is someone whose relationship with the mother is the mother helps them get into drag for their first time and kind of helps them develop their own drag style, their look, and work on the makeup. Because getting into it on their own is so challenging.
Yeah.
Not knowing how to do makeup and just trying to go for it is a lot of trial and error. And trial and error with makeup is expensive.
True.
Oh, my gosh.
Yes. Have you found that for yourself? Like,
I didn't have a drag mother going into it. I just kind of figured out how to do makeup on my own. Mm-hmm. No lessons, just, like, going for it and fixing it a lot and a lot.
Yeah.
And I've really, like, honed my makeup skills. I'm not where I want to be yet, but I've definitely moved from where I was when I first started doing drag. Because that took me something like 4 hours or something to get into the full, like, makeup look.
Yeah.
And now I can do it in about 2.
And how long does it take to wash off? That's the real question.
Most of everything comes off pretty quickly except for the eyebrows.
Yeah, because, like, the glue, right?
I don't use glue stick.
Okay.
So there's a few different ways. So what you'll see, like, on Drag Race and what a lot of people do is just, like, glue stick it down and then brush it out, put makeup on top of it. A way that I had tried for a while was a mixture of spirit gum and Prozade cream.
Okay.
And then I wasn't that big of a fan of that one, so I tried this. The one that I'm currently doing is, it's this industrial grade, like, adhesive.
Okay.
I'm blanking on the name. And then you just do loose powder on top, and you do a few layers of that. So where I'd started doing the, what was it, the glue stick way, I found that after I was performing and sweating, like, my eyebrow was just falling off.
Yeah.
But the thing about using, like, layers of industrial grade adhesive, it is difficult to take off.
Oh, my God.
So it's, like, 5 minutes of just, like, rubbing, like, some heavy, heavy industrial grade rubbing alcohol or whatever on my face.
Yeah.
That sounds, is that good for your skin? Like, industrial level?
No, it's not.
Beauty is pain, Lakshmi.
So it hurts a lot. Like, my face is often, like, super red after I take it off because you're just scrubbing your eyebrows, like, each eyebrow 5 minutes.
Oh,
everything
scared?
Else will
They're
come off really quickly.
Off.
Oh, just, like, I still use that. Like, I use layer makeup wipes with makeup remover just to get, like, the added oomph to get it out.
Yeah.
Wow. Wow.
But, yeah, taking it off, it's not a fun process, especially when you're getting home from a show and it's, like, 3 a.m.
Yeah.
You just want to go to bed, but you need to do that.
Yeah.
Can you imagine the state of your pillowcases, like, in the morning? Yeah. Oh, my God.
Also, you mentioned taking dance classes at Harbor. What kind of dance, like, what style classes
so
do you take?
The one that I'm taking there right now, it's this drop-in thing, so I can take other stuff, but it's Sexy Street.
Okay, I've heard of that.
Because it's one that's focused on, like, heels dance. I do take another one at, it's not at Harbor, but it's at this kind of yoga studio that's providing a space for this. So it's a voguing class.
Oh, nice.
So there's this.
Wait, what's a voguing class?
Voguing. So voguing's this kind of dance that was also originated with, like, people of color, like, queer people of color. So you might have, like, seen voguing and, like, it was not brought to popularity, but kind of brought more widely into the mainstream with, like, Madonna and stuff, and she was widely given credit for it, even though it was, like, it was made by people of color. Yeah, there's a drop-in voguing class in Vancouver, which is free or by donation. If you're interested in learning more about that, the title of it is Van Vogue Jam, and it's Tuesdays from 7:45 to 9, and it's very like welcoming to beginners doing it. Mm-hmm. And I've been going through a while, and I'm still really bad. Voguing is so hard.
Yeah.
But yeah, just a couple different dance classes to really work on like my performance aspects of my drag.
Yeah. Can you death drop?
So that sounds like a very like a painful dance move. Whatever that is, death drop? What is it?
So death drop was actually originated from this thing in Voguing, which is called a dip.
Okay.
The way that I like to describe the difference between a dip and a death drop is like a dip is controlled.
Yeah.
A death drop is just like what you'll see queens do, and they're just like flailing and like they'll hit the ground really hard. So I can do a death drop.
Yeah.
Because there's not really form that goes into that. You just kind of.
You just hurt yourself.
You just hurt yourself. Yeah.
Yeah.
They don't look great. Dips do.
Okay.
They're visually pretty much the same thing, but it's like the technical term for it, and it's what. It's what it is in Voguing. It's the way for it to look nice.
Okay.
Cool.
Thank you.
Cool. I know I can't say speaking of RuPaul because we spoke about RuPaul like 10 minutes ago. But speaking of RuPaul, I didn't know that he had his own music until like this morning. So just to annoy our listeners, I'm going to play a song.
Okay.
It's called Kitty Girl by RuPaul. Here we go.
In the spirit of drag.
In the spirit of drag. All right.
For today, catwalking like the world is your runway. People say that when the dog is away, kitty cats are gonna come out and play. Hey, kitty girl, it's your world. When you walk the street, step into the beat. Hey, kitty girl, get your twirl in the disco heat. You're the boogie body rocking queen.
Boogie, body rockin' queen. Boogie, body rockin' queen.
All right. Ms. Tosh. That was Kitty Girl by RuPaul. So in case that kind of made your ears bleed a little bit, I'm gonna cleanse your ears and play Traces of You by Anushka Shankar. Anushka Shankar. She's the daughter of Ravi Shankar, who's like a really famous Indian musician who plays the sitar. Here we go. This is Traces of You by Anushka Shankar. Hello, everyone. That was Traces of You by Anushka Shankar. And for those of you who are just tuning in, this is Intersections at 101.9 FM.
Okay, so I'm dying to know, and I'm sure everyone else is as well. Do you have any exciting performances coming up or like any, what's ahead for you in your drag life?
So next week, Totem Park has booked me to kind of host their event, which is a sex toy bingo thing.
Ooh.
Which, if that sounds kind of weird to you, it was very weird to get in a Facebook message.
Oh my gosh.
But yeah, it's next Tuesday. I think it's just for residents, so sorry if you were kind of getting pumped for that.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I'm going to be there for 2 hours doing bingo, talking about my experiences with sex toys to first years, which...
Fascinating.
I was really unsure when I got the message about it,
but
I just thought, like, this is the weirdest thing. Like, you can't not take this event. I don't know how I was going to talk for 2 hours. Again, it hasn't happened yet, so we're still going to see.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like, yes, I'm 100% on board for however this got greenlit. So, yeah, let's bring in some drag queen. Let's have them talk to first years about sex toys.
Mm-hmm.
And if they win a game of bingo, they'll get a sex toy.
Are you going to go in drag?
Yeah, that's what they're hiring me to do.
Yes, that's amazing.
They're hiring me to be in drag for it.
Amazing.
That's amazing.
Which is very soon after a class, I'm going to figure out how to get some drag, like day drag done.
Yeah.
Wow.
I've had some bad experiences with like doing drag too early in the day.
Mm-hmm.
When I was speaking about the Pride mural that's just outside the Nest, and when I was emceeing that, they had me come in for noon, and I had class before it. So I had to get up. I gave myself like 3 hours in the morning to get ready for drag.
Mm-hmm.
I had to get up at like 5 or 4 to just get it all done. And I showed up to my class 10 minutes late, just huge red wig, walking, like clomping down in 6-inch stilettos. And then I sat in the back of the classroom and napped.
Yeah.
It was not my best moment. But like, I think it was fun. And like, no one could be like, no one could look at that and then judge me after. They don't know what I look like.
Yeah.
You're fine.
Exactly. Incognito.
Yeah.
The dream.
Yeah.
And then also in August, on August 10th, I've been booked to do a couple numbers at Burnaby Pride.
Nice.
Very cool. Mm-hmm.
Is that in the parade, like on a float or something, or like afterwards?
I assume it's going to be on a stage. Mm-hmm. I'm imagining they're still getting all the details worked out, and I'll find out later. But they're planning on booking me for 2 numbers.
Nice.
Very cool.
I'm excited.
That's so exciting.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, this year, by the way, guys, Pride in Vancouver. So Burnaby Pride is on the 10th. Pride in Vancouver is August 4th. And just talking about that, I went to Vancouver Pride last summer, and it seemed pretty like drag had a very prevalent presence at Pride. Like, it's a very, I think probably because it's one of the more like performative elements of like the queer community, so it's like super just a great way to like celebrate and like get people's attention and that kind of thing. So yeah, did you want to talk a little bit about like drag's relation to Pride or like anything like that?
Yeah, for sure. So like, where really to start with drag and Pride is like where Pride originated.
Mm-hmm.
So I mentioned earlier Marsha P. Johnson and her relationship with the Stonewall Riots.
Mm-hmm.
What people don't often know is that the Stonewall Riots were the first Pride. So Stonewall is currently still open as a bar in New York. But what happened was that there were many like anti-gay laws that were passed in the United States, and there were some done in Canada as well.
Mm-hmm.
One of them was that you had to be wearing like 3 garments of clothing assigned to your gender. And yeah.
That's weird.
That's so weird, yeah.
Yeah, so often police would discriminate against that and harass that. Another thing is that operations like the Stonewall Bar were illegal to have happen, and they were on like the police's payroll. The police were on their payroll. They had to pay them off every so often to make sure they weren't shut down.
Mm-hmm.
But what ended up happening is that even though they had paid the police off, the police raided the bar and then people started like fighting back. So gay bar raids weren't that uncommon, but this was really notable because it was the first time people had started to fight back. So people were throwing like bricks at the police, and this sparked a riot that lasted a few days. And where I mentioned Marsha P. Johnson earlier, she was the first one to throw a brick and to start fighting back.
Mm-hmm.
Then people just started joining in, and that was the first technically Pride parade. That's what really sparked the movement. This also really relates to a lot of the concerns that people are having currently about, like, police's place in Pride.
Mm-hmm.
and thinking that police maybe shouldn't be, and then other people are responding with, well, shouldn't Pride be inclusive?
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
that's really neglecting where Pride comes from, and that, yes, it is a celebration, but most importantly, Pride is a protest. Pride is political.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And often there's the mindset that police haven't done enough work to, like, get back into, to, like, restore their place within the community.
Right.
Mm-hmm. What do you think about the sort of influx of, and I don't know if this is in recent years because I've only attended Pride like in my teenage life, which is like recent. Mm-hmm. So, but I've noticed that a lot of it seems to be becoming very like commodified, and like corporations seem to be trying mm-hmm. to kind of like wiggle their way into Pride. Maybe not necessarily with the best intentions, yeah. like using Pride to kind of like push their corporate agenda. Do you have any like feelings about that?
For sure. Well, there is something that's positive to say about corporations in like going into Pride. Mm-hmm. It means that like being queer is now socially acceptable, and it's now like it's more like economically viable to support queer people than mm-hmm. to oppose them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So as far as that goes, that just shows that like the research that they've done is in our favor. Otherwise, it does really just neglect what Pride is about, and it's not great for that. Vancouver does have something called Alternative Pride, which the person who, one of the member or a couple members of the Darlings, which is that drag group that I was talking about earlier, it works for VAL, which is Vancouver Arts and Leisure.
Mm-hmm.
So they produce a lot of events around Pride season in Vancouver for Alternative Pride, and there'll be like queer dance parties. It's just it's queer stuff put on by queer people.
Mm-hmm.
Really to for like people who aren't interested in such a corporate mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. flair of Pride.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Do you think that RuPaul, going back again, we're just gonna keep circling back to RuPaul.
We said RuPaul Drag Race is not an accurate representation, and we just keep circling back to it.
It's not an accurate representation, but it's also what a lot of people will be thinking of,
exactly.
And what
yes.
Everyone who knows anything about drag will definitely know about RuPaul.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And it does at least bring in a lot of different like communities together for that, because there's on RuPaul's Drag Race, there's their first Canadian queen who's on currently for season 11.
Wow.
But they'll often have places queens from Brazil and different mm-hmm. countries. So it's not only the United States.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because I was going to say, like, I guess this is a question for everyone, but I wonder, like, how much of the drag buzz is really from RuPaul's Drag Race, because I don't actually know, like, how many years ago did it start airing? Do you know?
I don't know how many years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I know they're on their 11th season of just the regular, so maybe 11 years, but not quite sure if they've done more or taken breaks.
Mm-hmm. So in your experience of, like, just talking with, like, queens that have been in the industry for longer, does anyone kind of, have you heard anything, I guess, about whether RuPaul's Drag Race brought a lot more of like maybe a crowd to drag shows or like that kind of thing, like if it's really impacted that?
I think that it has impacted something kind of like gay tourism in the sense that people are going to be like people who aren't necessarily a part of the queer community mm-hmm. will look to these places to mm-hmm. kind of observe what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
But for queer people, I think that if they already know about gay bars, they'll know of drag and that kind of stuff, because bars are going to be advertising it. I don't think there's a gay bar in Vancouver that doesn't have a drag show that happens frequently.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're really seeking out queer places, and for the most part, queer places are often going to be bars and clubs and that kind of thing,
mm-hmm.
which is its own issue.
Mm-hmm.
But you will have been open to drag, mm-hmm. drag in the drag community.
Mm-hmm.
This is sorry to interrupt you, Lily.
As
you were talking, this question popped into my head, Liam. Mm-hmm. But I'm curious, like, when you first started drag, and now that you're kind of like seriously into it, like, how did your friends and family react? Were they like super excited for you?
Yeah, everyone was really supportive, really on board.
Mm-hmm.
I was starting to do it in high school, mm-hmm. and I was never that. I didn't really attend high school too mm-hmm. much. Mm-hmm. I was always super busy. Like, I'd go to my classes, but mm-hmm. never really hang out with the people there. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So when I first got into drag, what the kind of story behind that was when I like decided I wanted to do it. Mm-hmm. I went to some Value Village, mm-hmm. and like it was the summer of grade 11, between grade 11 and grade 12, mm-hmm. as I had mentioned earlier. But I was just going around, and I saw this like huge poofy pink dress, mm-hmm. and I see it, and it's $20. I'm like, this would be pretty funny. Let's mm-hmm. try it on. Mm-hmm. So I do that. It fits. It's a bit snug. It's very tight, but I'm like, okay, we're getting the figure already. And I thought it would be like, how funny would it be if I just go to prom in drag? Mm-hmm. And also, since it's $20, I'm thinking, this will be so cheap. Mm-hmm. Like, we're not having to buy a suit. We're just saving so much money. Mm-hmm. And then I spent, like, $1,000 on, like, shoes, clothes, yeah. wigs, makeup. Yes. So I really enjoyed all of that. Mm-hmm. I love doing drag and this kind of stuff. And going to prom and drag was a really fun and weird experience because mm-hmm. the school wasn't too sure what to do. They had, like... At the ballroom area, they mm-hmm. had, like, little designated rooms because there was, like, a after-prom thing right. that was happening. So right. people could bring a change of clothes. Mm-hmm. And I'm just going into the guy's section trying to find my bag. And it was in the woman's because they were really unsure of how to, like, handle this. But they were, like, trying their best.
Yes. What are – I'm just kind of wondering, what are the – like, if there are any, the behind-the-scenes aspects of the drag community, like, besides the performative part of it, like, are there sort of, like, I don't know, do you get together with other drag queens and, like, have other events that are, like, not for the public, if you know what I mean? Like, are there those kinds of things, like,
basically,
more
tell us your secrets.
Yeah, yeah.
So those who are doing more, like, frequent, like, bar gigs and mm-hmm. have their own repeating shows, they'll often just, like, get ready together, I've seen, mm-hmm. and they'll... go to each other's shows. Like, you'll often just see, like, queens either in drag or out just mm-hmm. going out to different shows to support each other. So it's, there's definitely not a mentality of just, like, I'm done my show, I'm done doing drag until my next thing.
Yeah.
They're, like, they all really enjoy engaging with the community themselves. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, often they'll be getting ready together. They'll be, like, hanging out outside of it. There's that community they'll be hanging out after. Because after mm-hmm. shows, when they're done their performances, they might just stay around a bit longer to, like, dance with the community, dance with their friends. Mm-hmm. But another thing is they'll just want to head home because
yeah.
they have been performing, giving mm-hmm. it their all. Mm-hmm. And wigs are really hot. They don't release heat, especially there's this thing that people do where they'll like stack wigs to get more like voluminous hair.
Oh, wow.
So you can see, like, if you ever see a drag queen with the like enormous hair, mm-hmm. there might be a few wigs in there.
You know, her hair is mm-hmm. so big because it's full of secrets.
No, the only secret is more wigs.
Yes, yeah.
Wow. Okay. So, I mean, Liam, it sounds like when you first discovered drag and you got into it, was there ever any hesitation to get into it? I guess I'm just kind of wondering, like, for those out there who want to do drag and are kind of, I don't know, like, scared or nervous about it, just some sense of, like, trepidation, like, what advice do you have for them?
Understand that it's more than just makeup, because mm-hmm. you can paint your face and have that great. And if that's where you want to draw the line, that's great. Mm-hmm. You can do that. You could, like, that's your drag. That's mm-hmm. what you're wanting to do. But if you're wanting to perform, you need to know how to, like, be captivating on a stage for, like, mm-hmm. 4 to 5 minutes. Mm-hmm. You need to make sure you're good at memorizing your words. Because mm-hmm. if you're lip-syncing to a song, it's not stunning if you are just, like, mouthing offline. Mm-hmm. but, yeah, expect that it might be a bit expensive. Mm-hmm. When I was working and I had my manager who was talking to me about drag and I was mm-hmm. still, like, kind of interested, mm-hmm. they said it was their most expensive hobby. Like, it's the most expensive hobby. Because, mm-hmm. like, wigs, probably, like, if you want a good one, it'll start at, like, $100.
Oh, my
and
God.
And that's not styled.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That can add more, because, like, it's just, like, so much labor going into it. It's such a niche market that mm-hmm. nothing's being, like, heavily produced.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Wow.
But, yeah, if you want to get into it, also a lot of time for practicing. Mm-hmm. And you need to practice a lot to get better. And wherever you start, it's not going to be great. I remember the first time I tried to draw on eyebrows, just because once you block out your eyebrows, you mm-hmm. cover it all up. Mm-hmm. You just have a huge canvas on top of your eyes. I had no idea where to start. Like? I had no idea how to do the angle.
What do I do with all the space?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, right? I've got a big forehead.
We've got real estate.
If you don't know what to do with your forehead, move the wig down. Mm. Also, glue your wigs on.
Oh.
Because mine has flown off so many times before I knew how to do that.
Oh, my gosh.
I was in a musical last year on mm-hmm. campus mm-hmm. With not Totem Park, but Orchard Commons. Mm-hmm. So they put on Rent, and mm-hmm. I had the chance to play Angel in that, mm-hmm. who plays, it's not specified, but like a drag queen trans woman. Because mm-hmm. Although it is often said that she is a drag queen, it's also hinted at that she might identify as a woman, because this mm-hmm. was set during like the AIDS crisis.
Yeah.
And that's during the time where people often were using drag as a way to express their gender, like I was saying before. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I had that opportunity. It is specifically for like Orchard residents mm-hmm. to be in mm-hmm. that. And mm-hmm. I wasn't living in Orchard, but mm-hmm. I had friends who were like RAing at the time mm-hmm. and they just needed someone who could dance in heels. So they outsourced for me.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But I had to do a quick change because I was out of drag for a scene. And then 5 minutes later, I was in drag for the next scene. So I didn't have time to glue it down. It was not my best makeup, but it's what I could do in 5 minutes with a costume change.
For those...
So we have 3 minutes left. Okay. So time for one last question. Go.
I was just going to say...
Okay, Danielle has a question. Or okay. Lily, I mean...
No, go. You go.
Okay, I was just going to say, as like a closing thing, where for those as audience members that want to dip their toes into the drag scene, do you have any recommendations?
That's a good question. Because I've never been to a drag show.
Mm-hmm.
The best place to start is going to a drag show, talking to the queens, mm-hmm. asking mm-hmm. them for mm-hmm. tips, but also going online, finding your own resources, because it is demanding to be a drag queen. Mm-hmm. Drag mothers who want to take on drag daughters, that's a lot of time, effort, and money on their parts mm-hmm. to do that. So it's not the best thing to just assume that you can do that, but start small, practice the little things, keep practicing over and over. If you want to get into it, understand the little aspects of drag, and also understand that whatever drag you're seeing is not what it has to be.
Mm-hmm.
You
mm-hmm.
can make your own thing. You can mm-hmm. look at a queen and try and recreate her style, or you can look at a queen and want to do something completely different.
Cool. We have 2 minutes left. Danielle, I don't know if you can...
No, 2 minutes. Okay, quick question.
Mel's going to come in here super fast.
Is there any particular drag performance that stands out for you, like to you? Like,
you have 1 minute to answer this, yeah. Liam.
Anything that shakes it up. I love going to shows and seeing mm-hmm. like a queen do like a top mm-hmm. 40 track, just mm-hmm. jumping around, giving mm-hmm. us it all. It's fun to watch. Mm-hmm. But something that makes me just think, what is going on here?
Mm-hmm.
What does this mean? Like, I feel like there's so much meaning going into this, and mm-hmm. I just don't know how to start unpacking it.
Mm-hmm.
That's just, to me, what I really appreciate in drag.
The onions.
The onions, yes. Again, I can't stress enough the darlings. The weirdest show.
Mm-hmm.
They're losing their location, but they're trying to find a new one to do their next show. Wild drag, just stuff that's different, stuff that's really showing me who the queen is, mm-hmm. is what I love to do, but there's no wrong form of drag.
Awesome. Liam? Awesome. Thank you so much for being here with us today. Really appreciate it. I think a lot of our listeners are like super woke about drag now.
I know more.
We got schooled. We got schooled by Liam Hart, who has a lot of heart.
Dragged.
That was cheesy. It's okay. All right, everyone. Thank you so much for listening to Intersections at 101.9 FM. I hope you guys enjoy the wonderful sunshine outside and be kind to one another. See you next week. Or no, the week after next week. Okay. Bye.
Bye. Thanks for having me.